You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. As we inch closer towards the June 2nd primary, we're continuing our series of conversations with the candidates for governor. Today, we welcome Republican candidate Steve Hilton. An entrepreneur and former Fox News commentator, the British-American was a senior advisor for former conservative Prime Minister David Cameron before moving to the Bay Area 14 years ago. He became a U.S. citizen in 2021. Hilton has been regularly leading in the polls and received a key endorsement from President Trump. He joined us about his vision for California. Mr. Hilton, thank you so much for joining us on Insight.
Wonderful to be with you. Thank you.
So you have lived in the Bay Area since 2012, but you became a U.S. citizen a few years ago in 2021. Why did you decide to become an American?
Well, I love this country so much. It's interesting. And California, I kind of think of it as the sort of spiritual home I was always meant to be in a way. My parents are actually Hungarian. They were refugees from communism in Hungary. I grew up in England. But for many, many years, even before we moved here with my wife and my two sons in 2012, I just thought of California as this absolutely iconic representation of what I consider to be the greatest nation in the world, America. I guess partly informed by those, you know, the roots in the communist system and the oppression of freedom and so on. That really was very much part of how I thought about the world from an early age. And so America represented the antidote, the opposite of that. And California represented the very best version of America in my imagination. In fact, I now use this phrase a lot on the campaign trail and elsewhere. It's in the book that I recently wrote. California means to America what America means to the world. And America always meant so much to me from afar. And almost the minute that we moved here, I just felt this is where I'm meant to be.
And here you are. Not only are you here, you are running to lead the state. This is your first time running for office. You've had experience in UK politics, of course. You're an entrepreneur. You have spent time as a Fox News contributor. How do you think all of those past experiences prepare you to be governor of California?
I think they're very good preparation because obviously it's an executive role. And so one of the things that that involves, I think, is a kind of business mindset, not even dependent on the kind of business you've been in, but just the basic problem-solving, pragmatic mindset that comes with working in business and starting your own companies, as I have a few times now, a couple of times back in England and here too in California. And actually, that's very much the how I see this race and this job, not particularly ideological, not even that partisan, honestly. It's just we got a lot of problems. How do we solve the problems? That very business-focused mindset. The government experience, I think, is useful. It wasn't the majority of my career. Most of my career has actually been in business. But I did work for a couple of years as senior advisor to the Prime Minister in the UK, David Cameron. I had my little office there next to the cabinet room. And in a number of ways, I think that was also good training and preparation for what's about to come, because I saw up close exactly how hard it is actually to make change happen in government, how you come up against these very entrenched obstacles and bureaucracies, not necessarily ill-intentioned. It's just that's the way it is. You just have these massive entrenched interest that you have to take on if you're going to make change happen. And I'm not saying that we necessarily did a good job of taking those on and making change happen. In fact, you could point to the state of the UK right now and say far from it. But I have encountered that. And in that sense, it's prepared me for what's about to come. And the other thing I'd point to is that although David Cameron, my boss, was a conservative prime minister, leader of the Conservative Party, it was a coalition government with another party, the Liberal Democrat Party. And I actually shared an office in 10 Downing Street right there, as I said, next to the cabinet room with my opposite number from another party. Every day we'd sit there, we'd argue things through and talk a lot. But actually, you know, I really have got that experience of working across party lines to try and make things happen.
I mean, clearly you have strong disagreements with outgoing Governor Gavin Newsom, but is there anything that you think he's done well in his 8 years in office?
Well, I do want to try and be fair about that. Let's start with the positive. There's something that he's done that I just strongly agree with, actually, which is the initiatives he's taken on smartphones and schools, and I think that's absolutely the right direction. I actually probably would go further than him on that. I also would say that in the very, very early days of the pandemic, you know, that's a tough time for any leader. And I reached out to him and tried to offer my support there, try and send some useful connections his way. So again, I want to emphasize that I try and be fair-minded and not too partisan or tribal about things. But I've got to say, you look at the record, I mean, it's just the facts of where we are now in California after what is now 16 years of one-party rule. It's pretty damning. We've got the highest poverty rate in the country, tied with Louisiana, the highest unemployment rate of all 50 states, highest cost of living by far. U.S. News and World Report ranks us 50th out of 50 states on opportunity. Wallet Hub ranks us 50th out of 50 on affordability. Chief Executive Magazine ranks us 50th out of 50 states on business climate. And you can go on. It's just a very, very poor record. And I just think in the end, you've got to hold both the person and also the party accountable for that performance.
So what are some tangible things you would do in your first year as governor that would realistically ease the strain on Californians, especially when it comes to affordability?
Well, that really is the heart of what I'm arguing for in the campaign. In fact, the theme of we're doing town halls up and down the state, lots of people coming out to them. Crowds are really growing and it's very exciting to see that energy. But the theme is very simple. It's actually one word, Cal-affordable. And the plan is very straightforward. $3 gas, cut your electric bills in half, your first $100,000 tax-free, a home you can afford to buy. Now, each one of those has a policy reform plan behind it, which we can get into. But the theme of the action that I would take and that would be reflected in and contained in my first really major act as governor, which would be sending my first budget to the legislature. The budget is really the central policy-making vehicle.
In January, the budget proposal.
Exactly. So that's the first big move. And those priorities and the action needed to implement them will be reflected in that, as well as through some of the direct administrative action we can take. For example, on gas prices, one of the things that I think we need to do is just have a common sense position, which is that as long as we are using oil and gas in California, let's use the oil and gas we produce here rather than shipping it in on giant super tankers halfway around the world. Now, that is something that we can immediately take action on, and I would take action on day one through appointments and executive orders through the particular agency that regulates that, which is the California Department of Geologic and Energy Management, CalGEM. And so, for example, in terms of issuing permits to the industry to be able to maintain existing wells and expand them and so on. Same with water for our farming industry. I'm a great supporter of our ag industry, spent a lot of time in the Central Valley and our other ag areas. Through appointments to an executive orders to the State Water Resources Control Board, you can immediately start increasing deliveries of water to our farmers and other areas. So it's a combination of the budget and then immediate executive action to, you know, deliver what I really, you know, see the whole thing is about, which is just reducing the costs and hassle of living in and running a business in California.
Would you strip California's climate policies?
Well, I think we've got to really be honest about this. I think of myself as an environmentalist. In fact, I'm associated with a campaign in the UK in the early days of David Cameron becoming leader of the Conservative Party. In the UK, the colors are switched. So the Conservative side is blue and the left is red. And this particular campaign was Vote Blue, Go Green. And we really worked very hard to show that in many ways, the Conservative Party could be the party for environmental protection. I very much believe in that, but that's not the same as the very rigid climate goals, which I think have been taken to an extreme and are now really causing problems. So I'm all for sensible action on that, but not stupid things that are self-harming and don't actually help the climate. I mean, that's the big thing we've got to be honest about. What is any of this pain that we're inflicting on working families and small business in California in the name of climate action? What is it actually doing for the climate in terms of impact on global temperatures? I can't see any evidence that it's doing anything.
Do you believe in man-made climate change?
Yes, I think there's no question that human activity contributes to a changing climate. No question about that. I've never argued anything different than that. I'm just saying, let's not do things for the purpose of showing I mean, I hesitate to use the word virtue signaling because I don't actually think it's very virtuous when you're inflicting such pain on people who can barely afford it. Gas prices, for example. In the name of climate, we're importing oil from 7,500 miles away in Iraq on giant supertankers, spewing out carbon emissions. We're actually increasing carbon emissions in the name of climate action. And that just doesn't make any sense to me. So for some reason, we've got ourselves into this position where it's all about looking as if we're serious about climate, but the actions don't really affect the climate, but they do really hurt Californians in the present day.
As you're well aware, you're one arm of government. You would need to work with the legislature if you are elected as governor, and the legislature overwhelmingly Democrat, especially when it comes to the budget and negotiations and bills that want to become laws. You do have veto power, of course, but they do have the votes to override your veto if they so choose. So how would you work with this supermajority in the legislature?
Yeah. No, it's an incredibly important question and one I've thought about very deeply. And I think I'm attitudinally very prepared for that. It goes back to really how I started. I'm a pragmatist. I'm not an ideologue. I'm not tribal. I've always had friendships and relationships right across the political spectrum. As I mentioned, I worked in the UK government in a coalition. And that's how I would approach this. And actually, I think there are interesting signs that we may be able to get agreement on certain things where we completely agree with not just the priority. I think actually, truly, you know, we would all, if you sat down with Democrat legislators, we'd all agree about the need to make housing more affordable and utility bills lower and all these things that I want to get done. The question is, do we agree about the way to get there? I think in some areas, the answer is yes. For example, on my tax proposal, which I put out there on the first day of my campaign, there are two components to it. The first is to help working people who are really being squeezed with tax. You've got people earning, you know, what doesn't get you very far in terms of an income in California, 70 grand, 80, 90 grand, paying 9.3% state income tax. 9.3% is a higher rate than the top rate of tax in most states. And so the first line of my tax plan is a pro-worker tax reduction, which is your first 100 grand tax-free. Now, just the other week at a debate in Fresno, Katie Porter, one of my Democrat colleagues in the governor's race, announced on stage that she supports that. She said, I've stole it from Steve Hilton. I'm proud to say that. And I think we should take good ideas wherever they are. And we've talked about that, actually, Katie and I. And so I think that that's an example of where I think we actually will be able to get consensus. And that my election as governor, which would just introduce a bit of balance into the system. We've had 16 years of only Democrats running everything. I think introducing some balance actually could be very healthy for our politics and government, shake things up a little bit in Sacramento. And I'm very confident that we could work effectively together to make good practical things happen.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Steve Hilton, one of the Republican candidates running to be California's next governor. So you received a major Republican endorsement in this race last month from President Donald Trump. Is that a good thing, considering the number of Democrats in California is almost the same as the number of Republicans and no party preference combined?
Yeah, no, I hear that, of course. And as I said at the time, I didn't ask for the president's endorsement and I certainly didn't expect it. But I'm very honored to receive it, partly just as a new and proud American. There's something pretty special about being endorsed by the president of the United States, just on that level. I found it to be a deep honor. Secondly, I think that it's actually helpful for Californians to have a governor who has a good relationship with the president, because so many things that the federal administration does or doesn't do interact with what happens here in California. Now, look, most of the things that affect us on a daily basis come from within California, the laws and regulations that we pass here. But on so many of these areas where, let's just take gas prices, which, you know, part of getting gas prices down to a level that's more in line with what you see in the rest of the country is opening up California energy production. The president and his team want to do that. You saw some action that they took just recently with Sable, just off the coast of Santa Barbara. Gavin Newsom and Rob Bonta, the attorney general, are blocking that. And you see that kind of dynamic in so many other areas. Forest management, finding fraud and cutting it out of our spending, and so on, where you've got what I would characterize as common sense action or intention by the federal administration that would benefit Californians being blocked by the California Democrats. And more proactively, I announced my plans to bring Hollywood home, to take action to really stop the drain of TV and movie production away from Los Angeles and California more broadly by matching the tax incentives that other states and other countries offer and a few other changes that would make it easier to film and produce here in California. A big part of that is going to be the federal tax incentive. And I would argue that I'm in a better position to negotiate something really good for California and for our industry and jobs here in California because I have that endorsement from the president.
Well, one of the president's biggest actions is immigration enforcement. I mean, you shared with us, you're of course an immigrant to the United States. Your parents mm-hmm. fled communism in Hungary to start a new life in England. What do you think of President Trump's escalation in immigration enforcement? I'm talking about people being picked up at immigration court hearings, at their workplace, many people without a criminal record.
Yeah, I think that the real truth here is that, again, trying to take the politics out of it, if we possibly can, in such a charged issue, is that there is actually a model for the level and nature of immigration enforcement that I think most people would support, which is if you have laws, we should uphold them, we should enforce them. What's the point in passing laws and they're just ignoring them? And actually, you saw a high level, just slightly higher than now, of immigration enforcement under President Obama, and including deportations. But you didn't see the kind of confrontational posture from around the country, either from Democrat or Republican states. And that's why I think it went much more smoothly then. And President Obama was very clear. There's some strong statements he made about, it doesn't matter how you came here, it doesn't matter how decent you are. If you break the law to come here, you need to be held accountable. It's almost a direct quote from President Obama. And I think that's the kind of enforcement we need to get back to. And I think the sanctuary state policy and attitude, highly confrontational, that's what drives enforcement operations having to take place in ways and in places that none of us would want in terms of going into the community, in terms of, the kind of confrontations we've seen on the streets. No one wants to see those scenes again. And again, my argument would be, let's have a governor who will work. Obviously, immigration and policy and enforcement is the responsibility of the federal government. But let's have a governor that doesn't get in the way of that and actually works to make sure that goes smoothly and in a way that lowers the temperature on this whole issue.
What are your views on reproductive rights? I mean, as Roe versus Wade was overturned by the Supreme Court, California went big, codifying it into their state constitution, right, the right to receive an abortion up to a certain number of weeks. What are your views on reproductive rights in California? Because they be a sanctuary for reproductive rights here.
Well, I think the sort of fundamental point is that nothing's going to change when you elect me, because that's, as you pointed out, that's in the Constitution. Californians have spoken very strongly and clearly on that. And as far as I'm concerned, that's really the end of the story. There's not much more to say. And my focus will be on those issues where I do have the opportunity to bring positive changes. And so it's not an issue that I've particularly thought much about in that sense, because it's not going to be an area of any change when I'm governor.
Yeah, as we wind this conversation down, you did receive the president's endorsement. But what was also interesting was at the California GOP convention, neither you nor your other Republican candidate for governor, Sheriff Chad Bianco, received the party endorsement. Same happened with the Democrats as well. But there are a lot more Democrats running than Republicans. What do you make of that lack of consensus within the Republican Party in California?
It's interesting. It's the first time I've run for office, as you mentioned, the first time I've ever been part of a process like that. And one of the things that we've learned after the process is that actually it's a classic insider game, that whole thing. It's a small number of delegates who are voting. It's a highly organized election. You have people in the party hierarchy with proxy votes and all this kind of stuff. There's a lot of shenanigans of trading proxy votes and all this stuff that I don't particularly understand. But one thing that we've been informed about is that actually the real reason that decision came out the way it did was that the legislators, the Republican legislators in the Assembly and in the Senate, worked very hard to take votes away from me and direct them towards the other Republican, which of course is their right. But it's an interesting signal to me that my whole attitude to this, which is that I'm an outsider, I think the system is broken. It's very obviously so. It's not just about Gavin Newsom and the governor. In fact, you could argue that the legislature has had perhaps a bigger role in creating the problems we've had in California, that the governor should have done more to stop it. But there's a lot of corruption in Sacramento. I've really noticed that in my interact. The more I learn about Sacramento and how it works, the worse it seems, the more of a corrupt system it seems to be, with insiders buying influence and so on. And so in a way, I'm not surprised that they don't want me there, because I'm an outsider and I'm planning to shake it all up.
Finally, as you know, the primary is set up so top two candidates, regardless of party, advance to the general election in November. There is a concern that, you know, with the number of Democrats, it could be two Republicans. I mean, you and Chad Bianco have been polling at the top this year, all the way in the primary is just about a month away. Ballots go out on Monday. Are you at all worried of the opposite happening, that there wouldn't be a Republican on the top two ticket for the general?
I am. I think that's a very serious concern. And in fact, that's one of the things I've been warning about all year. I've been arguing since the beginning of the year, as we've seen these polls showing myself and the other Republican in the top two in many of them, that is a fantasy. That's not going to happen, because the Democrat machine is not just going to give up power as easily as that. They have tens of millions of dollars to spend manipulating the result. We've seen that before, for example, with the Senate campaign with Adam Schiff and Katie Porter 2 years ago. And so they would make sure that there's a Democrat in the top two. And in fact, the more dangerous outcome for California, because it would mean that despite the fact that there's a majority of Californians now believe that the state's going in the wrong direction and that we need change, they wouldn't have the chance to vote for change, because you could have, and this is the scenario I think that is still a real possibility, that you have, if you like, an establishment machine candidate rising up. It seems to be that Javier Becerra is now the person in that role. And you have, of course, Tom Steyer, the billionaire, has already spent $140 million on his campaign. There's plenty more where that comes from. And so you could imagine that he would spend even more to get even higher. And that's why my argument is very strongly that on the Republican side, and really in the interests of all Californians who should have a choice for change in the election in November, it's really time for the Republican side to unite behind the leading candidate. And frankly, right now, that is me on every measure. I'm leading in the polls, leading on fundraising. I have the endorsement of the leader of the party nationally, President Trump. And so I think that's very, very important that we do get behind the leading candidate and make sure we offer Californians a real choice for a new direction in November.
Mr. Hilton, thank you for the time.
Of course. Great to be with you. Thank you.
That is my interview with Steve Hilton, a Republican candidate for governor. You can find our ongoing series of gubernatorial candidate interviews on our website, capradio.org/govrace. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. We're back in just a moment.